Okay, we are in the 8th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes tonight, and this is kind of a rare thing, I guess, because Solomon touches on so many different topics in the course of this book, but almost all of this 8th chapter is going to be dealing with a single subject of government. So if you wanted to put some sort of a title on it, you know, it has to do with the king to begin with. But the larger scope of it is his observation that there are those who have great power and they wield it to another individual's hurt. And so he's going to be dealing with several aspects of government and problems that you have with government here in this 8th chapter. It begins with chapter 8 and verse 1. Who is like the wise man and who knows the interpretation of a matter? A man's wisdom illumines him and causes his stern face to beam. So, wisdom is always better. This is one of those that I marked the verse number in green. One of the reward passages is what I've been calling them. But a man's wisdom illumines him. It enlightens him. And it makes you happier. It makes your stern face to be. When you have circumstances that are unpleasant in life, when you're going through troubles and trials and travails, and so your face is stern and you can't help it because you know, circumstances are just less than enjoyable, wisdom will help you to find, that if not outright, humor in the circumstances. It will help you to make the decisions, ultimately, that need to be made. It will resolve those problems, and so your face then goes from being stern, is the New American translation there, the unhappy, to beaming happy again. But there's a rhetorical question in the first part of this first verse that is something of a recurring theme throughout not only this book, but it'll come up again in the chapter. Who is like the wise man and who knows the interpretation of a matter? And there are really two ideas right there. The first, who is like the wise man and who knows the interpretation of a matter? And wise men are rare. Wise men are difficult to understand. And who can interpret a matter? Often enough, if you meet a wise individual and they bestow their wisdom upon you, what happens? Doesn't make any sense to you. I know it happens to me all the time. If I meet the wisest thing there ever was, what am I? I'm dumb to know it when I hear it. And so I'm likely to discount the thing or ignore the thing, and certainly not to practice whatever it is he's talking about there. So who is like the wise man? Not very many. And who knows the interpretation of a matter? So you may not know his interpretation, or it may be, this is the second way, is that nobody knows. There are many things that we're never going to know. He's already told us several times that God conceals things from us. It's in our best interest that we not know. Our not knowing causes us to depend upon Him. Our not knowing motivates us to continue to study and to grow and to learn so that we might. And so it's a good thing sometimes when I don't know the interpretation of the matter, I'm going to profit from the pursuit of that interpretation. So there's this about wise men, and it'll then be flowing into the idea of the king and his judgments, who we're going to presume is a wise man. So in verse 2, here he comes. I say, keep the command of the king because of the oath before God. Now, there's two ways to understand that oath, and I have no way to know really which it is. Keep the command of the king because of the oath that he made, or maybe the oath that you made. Now, when kings take their position of power, when they're, we would say, inaugurated for our presidents, but when a king takes to the throne, that king has to swear that he will rule this country in the country's best interest and in the light of God's word. Now, throughout the Old Testament, God's beef with kings that are not serving either the people or God well, you know, are just legion. This is the very definition of a bad king, is when he's not doing the best for the people or he's forsaking his God, you know, altogether. So, keep the command of the king because of the oath before God may mean, when you've got a good king at least, he made an oath to serve God. He's doing the best that he knows how to do. You can depend upon the man's attitude at least. He is sworn to uphold the law and God's law, and because he has done that, then pay attention to what he says. Keep the commandments. Do not be, you know, rabble-rousing malcontent who's causing this man then even more problems. Or because of the oath that you took before God. And as well, for instance, particularly with Moses, you will find the people swearing an oath that everything God had said on Sinai, they will do. And what God had said on Sinai, among those things, you know, is that Moses is going to be this leader. You are to do what he tells you to do as well. And so you've made an oath as a faithful member of this kingdom. You know, you have responsibilities to keep that oath. And therefore, when the king gives the command, you obey. Now, brethren, it's human nature, we all know that, you know, that it's always uncomfortable to do things somebody else's way. It's obvious. We always think that what we think is the best way. And it is the best way we can come up with. See, we're not capable of thinking of something better than what we can think. So we always think we're depending on, you know, wisdom, and we would certainly do it, you know, the right way. And anything anybody else is doing, you know, it just has to be wrong. It's just the natural way that you feel. But faith and submission both require that I am going to do what somebody else says I ought to do, whether I like it, whether I think it's wise or not. Keep the command of the king. Now, in the end, does it matter which oath we're talking about? If there was no oath at all, what is the command that he gives in verse 2? Keep the command of the king. See? So he's given you a because, which ought to be another motivator that would move you then to be, you know, more efficient and effective in obeying these commands. But whether there's, you know, such an explanation or not doesn't matter. When Solomon gives the command, he's the wisest man that ever lived. He is saying your life's going to be happier and the whole nation's going to be better off, if you will. Now, it's been so frustrating, I think, for all of us, probably as Christians here in this country, loving this country as much as we do, appreciating the freedoms that we have in this country. I hung a flag off my garage 2 days ago. I love this country. Spent 3 years in the Army, the three best years of my life in some respect. You know, really glad I did it, proud of it. All that, you know, really upright and good. But it's just so frustrating then when I turn on the news, it's just almost every day that somewhere somebody is having a protest. Everything that has ever been imagined in the mind of man has been protested. Every law that has ever been made has been protested. Every lack of a law that was never made has been protested. You know, just, we've gotten carried away in this nation with these freedoms and these rights that we have, and so that, it's just become, you know, just kind of insane that no matter what happens, no matter what you know will take place for sure, somebody's going to protest. See? And really, it's universal. And it's so frustrating because whenever you have a protest, you have a violation of Ecclesiastes 8, verse 2, don't you? You've got somebody rising up to say, I'm going to criticize, I'm going to oppose, I want to make a big show. And most of the time, you know, it just strikes me as being petulant, you know, children who are pitching a fit. You know, like, I'm going to hold my breath until I get my way, kind of, you know, and I'm going to hold up traffic and all this kind of stuff.
You know, and it's just so frustrating because we have these freedoms. It's a wonderful country, you know, and most of the time when things go wrong, they are recognized for going wrong, and then what does the government usually try to do? They usually try to fix it. They really do, and they're driven to do it because they have constituents that people get on their case, you know, and I know there are those that are corrupt and they're only in it for the money and the power and all the rest of that, and again, I can't give you percentages, but so often in our lives, let's put it that way, how many times have you seen those guys wind up in jail? You know, eventually they get busted, they get run out of office, and they wind up behind bars or whatever. And you and I have all seen scores of them in the course of our lifetime. Well, Solomon is the best king there ever was. He's saying, look, keep the command of the king because of the oath. Whatever that oath may be, keep it. Now in verse 3, do not be in a hurry to leave him. Do not join in an evil matter, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since the word of the king is authoritative, who will say to him, what are you doing? Now, our country is different, and here you really do need to translate. Theirs was a monarchy. Solomon held the power of life and death with his decision, and it wasn't appealed. When he made up his mind, that's the way it was going to be. There was no higher authority. There was no court to adjudicate. There was just his word. And he said, off with their heads. Then it was off with their heads. That's the way that it works. So don't be in a hurry to leave him. Don't join in an evil matter. He's a king. And that king is going to do whatever he wants. And since the word of the king is authoritative, verse 4 doesn't use the word, but I think it's the whole point of it, it's just mighty foolish to go up and question the man, what are you doing? I know I've said this several times, of course, the last few years that I've been here. But brethren, you know, we don't know the circumstances unless we hold the office. And it doesn't matter what office it is. How many of you have been crossing guards? What do you know about being a crossing guard? Not much. And it might be really easy, you know, for us to say it ought to be done this way, it ought to be done that way, you know, but we have no idea what the training is, what the rules are, what they in order to do that they have to do, and why they make no sense to us as we drive by, and it might just be the smartest thing that man ever came up with. So everybody just again thinks that whatever goes on between their ears is the best possible way that this thing can be done. And if we just sit down, you know, on the curb for a minute and think about it, much of the time, if not most of the time, that is not so. And we just simply have no idea what we're talking about. And so here's Solomon saying, look, don't be hasty to question what he's doing. You don't know the reasons. You don't have the evidence. You don't know the politics of it. You know, so when you start criticizing whatever government official it is, that is at least something Solomon would counsel that you avoid. And don't be in a hurry to leave him. So this oath that we saw back there in verse 2 may well have been an oath that these people in the kingdom made to their king. And if you've taken an oath, well, then what? You're pretty stuck, aren't you? You really are. You're pretty stuck. By the way, it's got really nothing to do with what we're talking about here, but Donna reminded me when we were talking about oaths earlier back in chapter 5. We had a friend, this goes back 30 years ago, and she came to me one day and she said, Larry, you know, I really have got a problem. I want to talk to you about this, you know. And so, okay, fine, you know, so what's your problem? And she said, well, I took an oath, and now I realize how foolish it was, and I just want to know, you know, is there a way to get out of an oath? What, you know, did you read the Bible? Maybe I missed something. You know, is there a way to undo it? Oh, I did. I took it. No, I did. You know, but I really don't want to do it. You know, so what's the next question? Well, what was the oath? She was feeling particularly one day devoted to her God. She was having some sort of a flush of faithfulness, you know. And so she swore, as a demonstration of her love and commitment to the Lord, that she would never eat chocolate again. Yeah, see how bad that is. So far as I know, to this day, she's never tasted it again. As I told her. I put your way out of it. Sorry. But I don't know your way out.
You need to call her and tell her to drink her chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Carol would have made a great Pharisee. If the oath was not to eat, Indy, Carol, in case you didn't hear, well, tell her to drink it then. Okay. So when you make an oath, chapter 5 was very, you know, insistent and had harsh penalties for those that would not keep the oath. Well, you know, not that we take oaths as American citizens, but brethren, if you're a citizen of this country, what does Romans 13 say? Keep the command of the king. It says exactly what what Ecclesiastes 8 verse 2 says. And half of chapter 13 is about that. The Solomon is just giving us some wisdom, some insight, something most of us lack, seeing that he's the wisest there ever was, that there are reasons why Romans 13 exists, and that we are to keep every law on the books. Every single one. Okay? That's our responsibility. And as soon as we start second-guessing those laws, as soon as we start assuming that we can change them, or everybody knows, you know, that it really means this, as soon as we start doing that, what have we done? We have left the king. We are not being very faithful citizens. It is an act of rebellion. And so unwise in Ecclesiastes and forbidden in Romans chapter 13. That's pretty serious business. And I'm sure it's really on Solomon's mind, because after all, who is he? He's the king, and he must get mighty tired of it. And people come and second-guessing the wisest man on earth. Maybe all-time favorite joke slogan is, people who think they know everything are a constant irritation to those of us who do. We all think that our way is the only right way. And it's annoying. You know, we hear from others. You know, well, here's the wisest man who ever lived. There wasn't anybody who suggested something that was a surprise to him. And he must have gotten pretty tired of it. So, do what he says. And don't be asking, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? What are you doing? Yeah, when you're throwing your shoe at the television next time, you know, what are you doing? You know, remember, Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 4. 5 says, he who keeps a command experiences no trouble, for a wise heart knows the proper time and procedure. Now, for just a second, Solomon is the wisest man who ever lived. Does that mean that he had no counselors? No. What will a wise man seek out in large numbers? Counselors. See, Proverbs gives us a lot of information on that, Ecclesiastes as well, if I'm not mistaken. And so, he is the wisest man who ever lived. But does that mean that he knows everything? Well, no. And just the data that people can bring you about what's going on in the kingdom needs to be heard. And their ideas on what they think should be done ought to be weighed. And maybe it is the best way to do it in light of the fact that they were there and you weren't. And if you're the wisest man who ever lived, if you're the smartest woman who ever walked the earth, but you weren't there when the event happened, who's in a better position to give an explanation on what's the best way to work. Probably the eyewitness is there, you know, can help you out on that. So, you know, there's a proper time and procedure at the end of verse 5, which is Solomon's way of saying, you keep the commands. You're not quick to leave it. And in the first part of verse 5, that you keeps it, experiences no trouble, for a wise heart knows when is the proper time and procedure. So sure, if you see things you don't like in the government and all the rest of that, what should you do? Shoot the television. Scream and shout. Lie awake and threaten about it. What should you do? Okay, one is vote. What's the other thing you ought to do, just maybe? You're so frustrated and unhappy with government. The country we're in, what can you do? Go get involved in the government. And isn't it frustrating? Now, all the people who know exactly how to govern, don't. It's kind of mind-blowing. You know, well, if you know so much about it, then go do it. You know, and I'm thinking, not having been in government, the minute you got elected, what would happen? I think the first words out of my mouth would be, oh, I didn't know that. I bet you those are the first words when you get elected to your first office. Huh, I didn't know that. Now you do, and it just might change everything. So there's a proper time and procedure. In verse 6, it continues, for every delight, when a man's trouble is heavy upon him. Now, it sounds kind of odd at first. There's a proper time and procedure for a delight when a man's trouble is heavy upon him. What's that about, you think?
Proper time and procedure for a delight. Time for everything under the sun. You know, you did all that in chapter 3. And when your heart is heavy in this context, sounds like it's heavy about what?
Law.
Government. The society. The circumstances you're living in. Got this royal command. You know, well, keep it, even though you don't like it. Don't be saying, what are you doing?
There's a proper time and procedure for every delight when a man's trouble is heavy upon him.
Ideas? Come on, Ed. What do you think?
All right,
yeah.
That's the King James.
Okay, read it to us, please.
Because to every purpose there is time and judgment. Therefore, the misery of the man is great upon him.
So they change it to, therefore, the misery is great upon him. It makes it sound as if, you know, he's just suffering because he can't change it. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's the next thing I want to get into, and I think it'll color the whole discussion then. So let's just go ahead and see if this helps in verse 7.
If no one knows what will happen, who can tell him when it will happen? No man has authority to restrain the wind with the wind, or authority over the day of death. And there's no discharge in the time of war. And evil will not deliver those who practice it. Okay? Now, verse 6 is an elusive kind of verse.
It's one of those, again, you know, I'm not sure what it's about. But in the light of Baltimore and Ferguson, you know, all the rest of these that we've been watching, you know, these recent riots and all of that, when you see the rioters, okay, frequently, often, what do you see on their faces? Big grins, and they're having the time of their life. It's just so much fun. It's a delight to destroy things. Now, who here has not thrown a rock through a window? Oh, good. Keep it away. You're the two. See, most people, there's just something about shattering and destroying. I don't know what it is. That we're drawn to it. There is a time for everything. In chapter 3, there was a time to destroy and there was a time to build up. Okay? Now, with this delight, Okay? And in this context about all this government here, there's a time and a place for having, you know, a delight. Okay? But destroying your government is probably not a good thing. And there is a proper time and procedure whereby you might change that government. So what he's saying is, keep your desire for delight under control. There's a proper time and a place. Don't, you know, let your ideas run away with you. By the way, people talk about giving somebody a, you know, a piece of their mind. Why do we want to give somebody a piece of our mind? I'm sorry, again?
To satisfy yourself.
That's the word I was missing. Exactly. Because we enjoy it. It's a release. You're venting, we say. You don't get all this pressure. Let it out. Okay. Wow. That was great. And also what? It's solidness to be believed. Foolish. Counterproductive. Going to get yourself in trouble with the king, wrong time, not proper place or procedure, you know, everything about it was wrong. But at the moment, what? Oh, it feels good to tell somebody off. Raise your hand if you've ever walked away from an altercation. It's about 30 to 60 seconds later and you say, oh, I wish I had said that. Okay. Why did you just have that thought? Because it's delightful. You thought of a better way to what? Put somebody down, prove your point, you know, whatever it was you're involved in. It looks to me, brethren, like these are the ideas that Solomon is kind of juggling here. He's working with government through it all. And so as I'm looking at these things, you know, I'm trying to second guess Solomon, if you will, with my limited insight. Here's the wisest man. And so back to verse 6 again, there's a proper time and a procedure for every delight. Now, by the way, if you change a law, long, hard work, and you actually got involved instead of just criticizing it all the time, and you went to work, and you got some bill started, and you got it passed, you know, and it actually now is put in place, and it's the law of the land, how would that feel? It would be a delight, wouldn't it? Proper procedure, that would be delightful too. And then in a couple of years you realize how foolish it was, and there you'll be with another bill to undo the first one. I know we're struggling, you know, to make everything work here, but I think that's what he's got in mind. And particularly because of verse 7 following 6. If no one knows what will happen, who can tell him when it'll happen? You don't know what you're talking about most of the time. God has his purposes. No man has authority in verse 8 to restrain the wind with the wind, authority over the day of his death, and there's no discharge in time of war, and evil will not deliver those who practice it. Okay? So, when you see evil, you see injustice, you see this stuff at the end of verse 8, you know, happening, just recognize that's the way the world turns. As my dad used to always say, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Never quite understood what that meant, but that's what he used to say all the time. And so, brethren, you can't restrain the wind with the wind. You don't have authority over the day of death. And when a war is going on, who's in charge? Nobody. There's no discharge in the time of war. You can't predict the future. You don't know, you know, what's going to happen. That's a free-for-all every time it takes place. So now, in 9, all this I have seen and applied my mind to every deed that has been done under the sun, wherein a man has exercised authority over another man to his hurt. Now, my take on this, brethren, is that these first 9 verses should be read all together. And if we're ever going to understand them, the best way would be read those 9 verses, you know, without interruption. And maybe read them several more times without interruption. Then look at the individual verses. Then go back and read all 9 of them again. Because that last thing there, you know, helps to demonstrate, I think, to prove that all of these verses are dealing with injustice in government. Now, let's go. That being the case, let's go right back to verse 2. I say, keep the command of the king because of the oath before God.
Is the command of the king always right?
No.
Is the command of the king always wise?
No.
Is the command of the king necessarily the best thing that ought to be done?
No.
And what if the command of the king is something that's just wrong? What should you do?
Well, I'd take rioting off the table first. You know, insurrection and all that next. Okay?
What should you do thinking about the middle verses?
Think about the proper time and procedure.
Go to work and see if you can change that king's mind. Okay?
And then, now taking into account the book of Acts,
even if the thing is wrong, what should you do unless?
Even if the thing is wrong, you keep the commandment, unless what?
See, unless it violates God's will.
Now, when you've got a simple statement in Scripture, that's going to trump anything ever said. And if that king is asking you to commit a sin, then what? Now, we've got a problem. Okay? So the apostles, they were told, quit preaching. Did they?
No.
They had a higher responsibility before God. But until you get to that choice, brethren, which is likely to be really seldom, what should you do? You've got to respect the government. You obey the command. You go and do what ought to be done according to the king. That's what submission is all about. So, Solomon is seeing it, and he's trying to help us to understand. Be careful about what you delight in. Look for the proper time and procedure for the things that you delight in. You don't know the future in verse 7. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know when it's going to happen. You're just as much wind as everybody else in verse 8. You do not have authority over death itself. There's no discharge in the time of war, but just know this. Those who do evil ultimately will what, according to verse 8? Last statement. Ultimately, they'll fail. And they'll pay the price for it. And does God need you for that?
Now, you may play a role, but not necessarily, and maybe most of the time not. God in His time will take care of things.
So, not necessarily, you know, my problem. Alright, now, verse 10. So then, I have seen the wicked buried, those who used to go in and out from the holy place, and they are soon forgotten in the city where they did thus. This too is futility. So those evil people, the wicked, whether they're kings or not, they're eventually coming to their end. And now in verse 11, still very much dealing with the government, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. Now, my way of thinking, that's one of those, you know, you need to mark and be able to find. So, I think one of the most important verses in the whole book there. It's about government, again. It's also about child raising. It's also about business. It's about anything that ever involves something that's right and wrong and a punishment ought to take place. When you postpone punishment, what do you necessarily do? Thus saith the wisest man who ever lived. You promote, encourage, prolong, and produce more evil. That's the way the world works. Now, if I ask you, is the United States really quick about punishment?
Okay. Now, remembering everything we've already read. I feel exactly the same way. Here's the truth of the matter. If the, you know, the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, the hearts of the sons of men fully given among them do it evil. They'll just surrender to it, you know, totally. They will. Okay, so if the government is failing to execute the punishment quickly, then what should we do? Whining and griping and groaning and grousing isn't going to help anything. It just makes you feel bad. Okay? That's the fact of the matter. And I think it is. And you all seem to agree. Then what should you do? It isn't to disobey the king. What were those Charles Bronson movies? I never saw one. I never did about as many of those as there were Rocky films. What were they called? Remember Charles Bronson being a vigilante? You don't take matters in your own hands. You don't do that. You can't be in submission to the king and a vigilante at the same time. You just don't do that. It's not wise. It's not productive. So what do we do?
Well, I just was wondering if that verse 11 could be interpreted that when evil isn't taken care of in a quick manner, and everybody sees that, okay, the riots happen here, and they get all of these things and nobody takes care of it, then it encourages the people in another spot to riot and do something or whatever. If you see somebody from the company stealing something and it's not being taken care of, they're turning a blind eye to it, then the next person along says, okay, well, I can do that too then.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's precisely it. And you've got it. And it works in the home, it works on the job, it works for Tom Brady. It works, brethren, in government. When people see that there is no price to pay for sin, crime, whatever you want to use, when they see that you do wrong and nothing happens, what have you done? You have encouraged and promoted more of that. Now, one of the absolutely most disgusting things in my life, just, you know, and I see it time and time again, in every store I've ever been in, you know, some little kid's, you know, acting up, and mom says, you know, be still. And then they give the empty threat. Whatever that threat is, I'll spank you. And they don't. I'll give you away, whatever it is they're threatening to do. But you know, how many times have you seen parents out in public doing this? And then they don't follow through. What are they doing to that child?
They're lying.
Well, first place, they're lying. And according to Solomon, what are they producing? More of the same. More of the same. Well, but I love him so much. You don't love him enough to discipline him, and that's not much love at all. It isn't worth anything. Okay? Solomon's wanting us to understand that this is true. To the extent that any nation gets farther and farther away from quick justice, what is that nation necessarily becoming? More and more lawless. It's going to get worse and worse. Now, we've been picking on the rioters a lot. Okay? If a police officer misbehaves, then what should happen? Swift justice. And if not, what will that encourage other police to do?
Same
thing. Now, I sit down for lunch. Typically, I'll turn on the TV, and I was watching one of those caught-on-camera things here, you know, the other day eating lunch. And it was just the most awesome thing. I just couldn't believe it. It was down in Arizona or somewhere. It was a desert, you know, area, but hills, you know, and scrub brush. And this guy had stolen a horse. Did you guys see that one just recently? Guy stole a horse, and they got helicopters, you know, where's he going to go? And eventually, the helicopters dropped some policemen, and there's another helicopter filming the whole thing. You got the bird's eye view. Okay. So the cops converge, and they tase the guy, and he threw himself down on the ground. And then, it was 13, wasn't it? What did 13 cops then do? Beat and kick this guy to pieces. It was unbelievable. One after the other, as they ran into the screen, running, bam, they hit this guy. And he just came from all sides. And then after, it went on for 3 minutes, I think it was. And at one point, it was like hyenas feeding on a carpet. You couldn't even see the guy. And then they started replacing each other. So there was room to get at it. I couldn't believe it. Now, what ought to happen? Quickly. Okay, done deal. It ought to be over very soon. Otherwise, what are we promoting?
The same.
Same thing. Whether that lawlessness is in the government or in the police force or it's out on the street, you know, in the public, it always works. Very important passage. Okay? So, in your home, what are you going to do? You're a parent. Kids out of line. And mom says, you just wait till your dad gets home. Don't ever do that, brethren. Daddy wasn't there. Daddy doesn't know what went down. Daddy doesn't know how to punish. If he wasn't there to see it, he's going to take mom's advice. You know, but then, what if you just made out of daddy? You abdicated your responsibility, and you're trusting it on him. Now he's the bad guy. You know, it's just all wrong. What do you do in your home when there's a crime committed? Let there be swift justice. Now, since we've had all this going on, you know, for weeks and everything, one last thought about that. Brethren, what is justice? Is justice what I want? Seldom. Okay? And that's another frustrating thing about America today, you know, when you listen to the news and everybody says, we want justice. They happened today in Wisconsin. They announced that this particular policeman is not going to be charged, and he killed a guy. Okay? And a video came out today. I know some of you would have seen that. And this one can't see anything, but it's nighttime. The cop pulled out the headlights on, you know, he went into this house, and then he backed out of the house, stumbling, and he fired 7 times. You can hear it, you see the gun muzzle flash, and then see just the feet of the guy that he killed. Okay? So they caught him on camera, kind of, and he was exonerated. Okay? And immediately, what does the family say? We're very disappointed because we didn't get, they always say, justice. Okay? But is it justice that they want? It looks like, brethren, justice is when you have an independent system in which impartial observers collect all of the evidence to make a dispassionate judgment precisely because they are not involved. Okay? And when the family, who can't get any more involved, say they didn't get justice, what do they mean? They didn't get their way. And redefining justice like that is not helping anybody. They did get justice. They just didn't get what they wanted. And what they wanted, apparently, based on all the evidence that the investigation came up with, see, what they wanted would not have been justice. See? See, that's it.
So we're hearing so many times now somebody was convicted and 37 years later they find out, oh no, he didn't do that. And you still have to get your head around that sometimes.
Yeah, this DNA thing is just the best thing that ever happened. And it's awesome how often they get it wrong. Really scary how often they get it wrong. Okay, so let's pass on from that to verse 12. Although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still I know that it will be well for those who fear God, who fear him openly. Have we left the government? I don't think so. He's talking about those who have authority over others to their hurt, injustice. But he says, Saul, I know there's going to be some. And evil people do get into positions of power, and they live long and, you know, happy lives, and it's wrong. But I still know, he says in the middle of verse 12, it'll be well for those who fear God, who fear Him openly. So when all that evil's going on, no matter who it is that's, you know, involved in it, you won't be involved in it if you're wise. You will not submit to this temptation. You will not join the mob. You will not join the group just because punishment isn't taking place when it should. Evil is a thing that we will always avoid whether or not there's a swift punishment. Verse 13, but it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like shadow because he does not fear God. So he says, it happens, but he's leading us to understand that it's rare for this evil man to live out those long days. The rule is, most often, God's going to take care of it. So when you sacrifice your morals and you burn your city down, you know, and all the rest of that, or you sacrifice your morals and you just become a bunch of uniformed thugs, you know, either way, you've become evil. And the evil do not lengthen their days. Usually they come to a bad end. Now in 14, there is a futility which is done on the earth. That is, there are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. We've just said there are probably hundreds of men and women in prison right now who didn't do it. On the other hand, there are evil men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. So everybody thinks, well, of them, they get all kinds of praise and live out. And it's futility. But every time that Solomon says, I hope you've got the message now, it's futility, it's vanity, it's striving after wind. Is he intending for you to just give up hope and sink into, you know, woe is me? No, what he's saying is, this is the way it is. And it's wrong. But there's a God in heaven who will take care of it. You have a responsibility to avoid evil. There may be a proper time and a procedure, and if so for you, avail yourself on it. But don't be whining and complaining and second-guessing, you know, everybody all the time, because you don't know what you're talking about. So Solomon is trying to tell us, with all the futility that you're going to have to deal with, how to be happy, stable and content, able to take your stern face and what? Beam. Sail through it all because you've been taught that it will always be this way. So, you're not running around tearing your hair out all day long. You avail yourself the opportunities you have, or you keep your mouth shut and obey the law. And then go on in the midst of all of that and be happy. Comes 15. So, and here's one of your green verses. I gave them all to you earlier, but here it is again. You know, one of the reward verses. So I commended pleasure. There's nothing good for a man under the sun except to eat and drink and to be merry. And this will stand by him in his toils throughout the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. We often think of this eat, drink, and be merry as being a really bad thing. And it can be, but what is Solomon saying about it? If you can learn how to eat and drink and be happy, okay? Great reward. That's really all there is.
Well, that's the reason that there's so much difficulty with that is that nobody reads the last half of the verse. And this is, will stand by him in his toil throughout the days of his life, which God has given to him under the sun. All they hear is to eat, drink, and be merry. They don't say anything about toiling or obeying God or anything else.
Well, amen. You know, they wouldn't use their freedom for license. Okay. But if the, in the last half of the verse, what it saw was just consigned us all to long lives of toil. It's going to be. So, be happy about it.
And enjoy your work.
Enjoy your work. He taught us earlier. Learn to enjoy the labor itself. By the way, I had recommended that y'all read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Donna went down to the library, checked it out, she read it, and then I just started it again. So it's been 35 or 40 years since I read it the last time. And really interesting. I'm in a passage right now where he's talking about humor in a concentration camp in World War II, Auschwitz. Okay? It's just a fascinating book. As a psychotherapist, when he went in, is analyzing what is happening to these men in these impossible circumstances. Well, I commended pleasure. Pleasure's a good thing. Now, there are times when it's evil and it's sinful, and if God's forbidden certain kinds or times and places for things, then it's an evil. But pleasure in and of itself is just great. I commend it. Pleasure is nothing good for a man under the sun. Eat, drink, be merry. This will stand by him in his toils throughout the days of his life which God has given him under the sun. It stands by him. Be merry. Be merry is a command. Be merry. It's a command because, brethren, it's a choice in all circumstances. Do not be the victim of circumstances. Circumstances don't rule your life. They don't rule your attitude. They don't dictate who you're going to be or how you're going to respond. Eat, drink, in the midst of all this toil and injustice and all that's going on, all this vanity, and be merry. Choose to be happy, not sad, not frustrated, not angry. Don't choose those things. Eat, drink, be merry. Watch a good Andy Hardy movie. And then go to bed. Be happy. 16. When I gave my heart to know wisdom and to see the task which has been done on the earth, even though one should never sleep day or night. That's a lot of hours of study in this problem. And I saw every work of God. I concluded that man cannot discover the work which has been done under the sun. Even though man should seek laboriously, he will not discover. And though the wise man should say, I know, he cannot discover. So this is quite promoting in Ecclesiastes. Smartest guy that ever lived, more opportunity than anybody else. Already smartest guy that ever lived, and God miraculously gives him more. He's got chapter after chapter after chapter revealing all that wisdom. Okay? He's given us great and good instruction. And then what does he tell you? There's so much I don't know. These are things he has learned. This I know. Okay? But did he know it all? No. It's the wisest guy there ever was, and miraculously so. He didn't know it all. He had his frustrations. He had his downtimes. He had his problems. Like everybody else, and there were a lot of times he worked the problem. He said, in fact, if I never slept day and night, he went on and on gloriously. I never figured it out. You can't figure it out. The secret things belong to God. Okay? So we have a hand up.
That's what I was going to say. Does that mean that it can't be discovered unless God reveals it?
Unless God reveals it. So then, he closes this chapter, and I think all of it is about government, with that final statement. You cannot know. God will not let you. So, when you're saying, what are you doing? Who's at fault? All you've done is just shame yourself. You've been counseled not to do that. So, get used to it. Eat, drink, and what? Meet me at the dairy queen? Classic Smith.